Melissa Pashigian is here, is a part of this team. And also Judith Owens and Peter Block, who is here. There's Peter taking a picture from Haverford College. Kim Conley is in the audience, and then Marcia Costello from Villanova University, and Darlene Bailey and Nell Anderson from Bryn Mawr College. Next slide. We unfortunately don't have any relationships to disclose either, but would happily accept them. We are four colleges that are fairly close together in suburban Philadelphia. The first one is Villanova University, where I happen to teach, and as Dan said, it is a mid-sized Catholic university. And we have four colleges: a College of Nursing, College of Engineering, College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. Oh, we have five, actually. A business school as well as a law school. But our overriding foundation is liberal arts. But we have more professional programs. Our other partner in this is LEMR, which is Lankenau Institute of Medical Research. And that is part of our local health system. And it's a hospital that has an independent research arm. And they're now looking into public health initiatives, mainly health disparities within the region. And then the other three colleges are Haverford College, which you can see they're all located fairly close together. And Haverford is a small liberal arts college with Quaker traditions. Swarthmore College, which is a little bit further away, depending on traffic, it's anywhere from 20 to 45 minutes. That's can be some issues for what our plans are. But Swarthmore is also a liberal arts college with Quaker traditions. And then Bryn Mawr College is a women's college, with they have undergraduate programs as well as master's and doctoral programs. And they have a school of social work. So we came together a lot in the way that had been described earlier with student drive for interest in public health, as well as our faculty at the other institutions teaching public health courses or courses with public health concepts. And so we came together and said, how can we share some of our resources? So that really was our purpose, to provide educational opportunities primarily to undergraduates, but we do, as I said, there are some schools with graduate programs, but meeting the needs of undergraduate students that otherwise might not be available to them. So we were going to share our resources. So essentially we were growing our own kind of public health courses within this consortium of these four colleges. What has also happened is it's been an opportunity for interaction with our colleagues in the other schools. The three smaller liberal arts schools already had a relationship and had done some sharing, but we were kind of out there on the edge at Villanova, and so it's been really nice to work with our local colleges that are truly right down the street. And so, you know, we find our similar interests or places where we could partner in research together. So that's been very valuable, as well as opportunities for students to interact together. And as you were all educators, so students tend to self-select the school and you kind of get a personality of a student. And so now we have students with that personality and interacting with one another. And so it brings a different perspective too, which has been very valuable, and the students have really appreciated that. And we also hope then to have opportunities for scholarship, and we have done some of those things. So what we essentially have done is we recruited faculty from the four colleges, and we are adding some more. Swarthmore College, someone else just came up and said that they would like to participate, which is really great. So we have all four colleges represented, as well as LEMR, the Research Institute. We have written a proposal for our consortium, and we have taken that to our administrators. And Kay is going to talk about some of the challenges of that, if you can imagine. Those of us in academia, you know how hard it is within your own institution to get things moving. And now we're trying four different institutions. So some places, and it's not necessarily with what we're doing, it's what's going on within their own institution, are having better luck than others. And Kay will talk about that a little bit in greater detail. We also have sat down and compiled a list of what are the courses at each campus that we can share. And our overall goal is to have students to be able to take courses at the different campuses. We have, at Villanova, had a relationship with Bryn Mawr College where students have had that exchange, and then the three other liberal arts schools have been doing that for quite some time. So that's an easy thing for them, but then to pull Villanova in, it's a greater challenge. So we're trying to harmonize that in a way that will work for all the institutions, and then we get into the financial piece, and it becomes a challenge. This summer, we had our first Public Health Institute, and we had 16 students from 8 different universities. So it wasn't just students in the consortium. Other schools were represented. But half of the students that did participate in the Summer Institute were from Haverford, Bryn Mawr, and Villanova. Unfortunately, we didn't have the sophomore students this summer, but hopefully this coming summer we will. In that Summer Institute, students were paired with researchers at LEMUR, at Lankenau Hospital, the research center, and they did a variety of things, and I just want to quickly check my notes to make sure I say this correctly, that examples of things that they did, they participated in rehospitalization with patients with heart failure, and they also, I completely misplaced my notes, just a second, and also did a pediatric injury prevention program that models after Johns Hopkins. So they, you know, they're partnering with researchers, and these are undergraduate students being able to participate in that. They also participated in a weekly lecture series in public health topics, and examples of those topics are careers in public health and ethics in research. And then finally, at the end of the summer, the students presented their research topics to professionals in the community as well as through LEMUR. And now Kay is going to continue.
So what I have in the next slide is goals that we set in June. And so the convening a meeting of provosts and deans to review our consortium proposal, which we had developed, we did this on an individual basis first. And as we did this, we discovered new barriers that we had not anticipated in implementing this program. And so there's a we had to take like a more realistic look at what we could accomplish in the time frame. So our goal had been to select 3 students from each campus to pilot the program, and the program would officially begin in the spring with an interdisciplinary course that we hoped would be hosted at Villanova University, and then with changes in their curriculum and the course requirements for their new global health minor, that this course is not going to be able to be offered in this coming spring. So, and we're also in the process of identifying potential funding sources, which Peter Block, who is a fellow at LEMUR, is working with us to do. So in the spring, what we had envisioned is that we would actually be able to pilot this course, and this is going to be now deferred to a future academic year. But we also will be launching a website so that we can publicize our consortium events and opportunities. Because as Ruth mentioned, there are many courses on the 4 institutions that are relevant to public health studies. And what we would like to do is to make more students aware of these opportunities and also to bring together the faculty at these 4 colleges so that we can share syllabi and that we can work together to create a more active academic community in this area. So we're in the process of setting up a public health speaker series for this spring. This will be linked with one thing that goes on at the Bryn Mawr Graduate School of Social Work and Social Research. So they have an annual public health series that is dedicated in the memory of Kevin Robinson, who was a faculty member in their graduate school. And last year, Dr. Regina Benjamin, the Surgeon General, spoke at that particular conference. Haverford also has a Presidential Social Justice Series speaker, and we're looking to invite someone from the field of public health to speak at that this spring. And so that would be open to everyone. We would really make an effort to bring students and faculty from the various institutions to these events. And then we'll once again be recruiting students for the summer internships. Oops. So challenges. Challenges for our coalition. So part of it, I think, is really cultural differences among our institution. As Ruth has mentioned, that the four academic institutions have a very strong focus in the liberal arts. However, Villanova and Bryn Mawr also have graduate programs. They also have professional programs, which have very different kinds of accreditation requirements. And so that's been some difficulty in trying to make something that works across these four very different institutions. So even though we all have a strong focus on social justice, sometimes that's expressed in co-curricular ways as opposed to curricular ways. And so, and none of our four institutions have a Master's of Public Health program that we can connect with. So in trying to do the sharing of course credits, Ruth has already talked about how there is this tri-college consortium with Haverford, Bryn Mawr, and Swarthmore. So we already share courses. And so any course that's offered at Haverford, for instance, can be taken for credit by Bryn Mawr and Swarthmore students. One of the things that our conversation with the provost and deans has led to is that there is now a TRICO working group to develop some kind of a minor or concentration in health studies. And we're still looking for a good name for this, and this goes back to what Lauren had described. This is not a pre-professional or a professional program. And so labeling it as a minor in public health is very problematic for some people in our institutions because it suggests to people that what they're getting is some kind of pre-professional or professional education. So the compensation for teaching new courses, administering the program, and internships is partly why we're seeking outside funding to try to fund this consortium and our, I think, rather ambitious programming on it. There are, each college and university does have funds, though, to provide support for students to do summer internships or to do co-curricular praxis opportunities. And so we're trying to work within the given structure to cohere a program that has broader reach. So the also capacity for change, going back to our title, which is about stretching the boundaries of our institutions, is that we want to stretch our institutional boundaries, but we don't want them to snap. And so we're trying to proceed in a thoughtful and a measured way in doing this, and bringing in as many people as we can along the way. And with various administrative changes at senior levels in three of the four institutions, and also the fact that for LEMUR, this public health initiative is a brand new program. So we're really sort of getting our feet wet as we move forward, but that we're very inspired by the faculty and the student interest in this and feel like that kind of energy will really help drive it, as well as coming to presentations at APHA. And I just wanted to thank the other presenters because you've given us wonderful ideas and ways to frame the work going forward. Thank you.
Okay, we have a few minutes for questions and discussion. I'll ask if there's any questions. Oh, there is immediately. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you. My name is Cheryl Cole. I'm from the Richard Stockton College in New Jersey. We're an inside liberal arts college, and our undergraduate program in public health has three tracks. This has been so informative, and I have a question because we have 3 years of data for assessment. A lot of our learning objectives for each of the tracks are linked with the educational institute's objectives. We have an advisory board articulation agreement, and our majors have almost tripled in the last 5 years. So we have this rich, wonderful qualitative and quantitative assessment data that is now almost, we're unable to do it because the amount of students. So we have been getting assessment data and making a feedback loop, changing the curriculum. For instance, adding an elective internship. Some of our students say, well, we wish we would have understood the internship and what we could do out in the field earlier on in the curriculum. So we have the intro to public health students come to the internship presentation. We have basically correlated the site supervisor, faculty, and students' evaluation of their competencies. They have a portfolio, they have a presentation. So obviously you can see our dilemma is this a time consuming. Is there any standard or models for assessment that are out there? I love this website, and I'm going to obviously add to the case studies to help from what we have done. But what we're now looking for is more examples or models or some ideas about assessment in a more concise, efficient manner, given the lack of resources and the rising in the students' demand for our major. So I didn't know anybody was had any information about that or any resources about types of assessments that are being used now, or am I jumping ahead a little bit?
I think you need to publish what you've done.
Well, my dean says that. She said,
number two, you need to volunteer to be part of the next phase of this.
I will be happy to. So.
And three, Susan.
Just an idea.
Susan, who are you? So it's important. No, you are Susan, and what do you represent? So
AACNU.
Thank you.
And we do a lot of work on assessment. If you don't know about the value rubrics, you might want to look at them. They are all aligned with the LEAP essential learning outcomes, and there's an integrated learning rubric that is developed by faculty. And I think that you can reframe it quite easily for public health. The value rubrics are free. They're at the AACNU website, aacnu.org, and you can also email me. I think this is really important, but there's a lot of good assessment work out there. You don't have to reinvest the wheel.
I had a question of Dr. Arnold. On her slide, she had on one of the bullet points something like exploring 3 plus 2 and 4 plus 1, and I wondered if you could say a bit about that.
Sure. We currently do not have any type of 4 plus 1 or 3 plus 2 program that would enable our current undergraduate students to begin their MPH during their undergraduate curriculum. And so we've had a lot of discussions about that and whether that's a good idea or not, and if it was a good idea, how to make it happen. And the way we've kind of stood at things right now is we're holding back on that a little bit. We do feel like if we're going to look at some type of opportunity for the undergrads to start their graduate work earlier, it would be a very small select group of undergraduates, that it would not be a large group. And that's partially because the MPH program at this point has a lot of students who come in with background experience in public health. They do get those that come right out of the undergrad, but they've got people who have been working for several years, maybe not even in public health, but they've been in the work world. And we don't want to overwhelm the graduate program with 40 undergrads who are now starting their graduate work while they're still an undergrad. But we've been looking at ways that might be able to enable, if we were going to do a 4 plus 1 program, enable some of a very small select group of undergrads to start taking some of their foundational courses, so their intro epi, their intro biostat, their intro environmental health during their senior year of college. If we were to do something at this point, I think we're thinking more of a 4 plus 1, not a 3 plus 2, so that they would begin in their senior year, not their junior year. But it's one of those things that we're exploring. We've held back a little bit on, but we're exploring if we were to do it, how to make it happen. And like I said, the conclusions we've come to is it would be a very small select group of students, and it wouldn't just be based upon a GPA, but maturity and, personal statement interview, that type of thing as well. So.
Sir? Hi, good morning. My name is Barry Sherman, State University of New York at Albany School of Public Health. I'm director of the DRPH, but I also teach the undergrad capstone. So talk about a gap. The doctoral students, I don't teach anything, and they do it all on their own. And with the undergrads, we try to teach a little bit of everything. But in terms of the outcomes, I've taught the undergrad capstone for 3 years now with a co-professor who's a DRPH student called Evidence-Based Public Health. And what I have learned, which wasn't explicitly there as a desired outcome, although you did say communicate in a variety of media, was writing. Scientific writing with a beginning, a middle, and an end. statement of a problem, background, methodology, analysis, and recommendations, the five basic parts of a paper, because we're teaching writing actually in this class, and it's actually just been designated as an undergraduate writing class in public health, although there's no room for anybody but the majors. The minors that were from bio and chemistry, I don't want to disparage anybody here, but they can't write a sentence. I'm serious, and it was such a revelation that they have to write a paper for this class. It's an evidence-based public health intervention for a problem of your interest and passion. But the writing is just atrocious at our school, I'm embarrassed to say, of seniors in college. So if there could be a specific one about being able to write a scientific paper with a beginning, a middle, and an end, I think it would help a lot of people.
Thank you.
Questions? Questions, and also in my class of discussion, any aha, anything you walked away from that you really get aha. My thing from my experience, but also from listening to all the speakers, is that we've got a phenomena, and as this person in the back said, we have the tiger by the tail. I mean, we're growing so fast. We went from 25 students to 375. We're going to double that in undergraduate public health. And Brenda talked about it. The best thing about public health is that it can break down the silos. When I first started designing the program, I asked my students, who are the best faculty on campus that teach public health-minded courses? And I went and worked with them to design my public health program. I broke down silos that were incredible. So basically, I have an undergraduate program that has 8 core courses, which means I have to have 8 faculty in my school to teach. And then I have 25 courses around campus that they can go take. And that's what you said about budget constraint. We're budget resources. We can actually cross disciplines. And I've been hearing about collaboration left and right. This is the time to work on collaborations. Ma'am.
I'm pleased that even in a very traditional institution with very thick-walled silos, we have already identified over 100 courses across disciplines with commitments to admit our students as selectives and electives. Mm-hmm. And we chose those courses as relevant to public health as well. And now I have people knocking on the door wanting to include their courses.
Exactly. Yeah. Right behind you, too.
Back to your, it's expanding so fast and you can't keep up. What are you doing to develop faculty?
I'm sitting in the West about case studies about Madonna's fourth domain. I really am. My epidemiologist, I'm going to send the Rosemary's case, was a wonderful epidemiologist at the graduate level. He got great reviews. He taught undergrad, and he got terrible reviews. And he almost went home heartbroken. As a young man, he really thought, oh, my God, I blew it. And then he switched from theory to case studies. And I'm going to basically real-life experiences. And he had to crash and burn before he was even going to listen to me. That you just don't want to go and do the theory textbook watered down from graduate level. But that's because we have a graduate program that we started in a graduate program. I have a lot of faculty that have to relearn how they teach, and it's a process. They got to crash and burn first.
We should let Dick comment.
Dick, please.
APTR actually has been in this game a lot earlier than a lot of us.
Yeah, I do think that the limiting factor on our success here is faculty development, and I think that one of the goals that I certainly hope we'll all take on is how to develop a network for communication and to support and mentor each other as we develop this, because I think that will make this movement continue to grow and to really build out the enthusiasm that's already there.
It's hard. Statements, ahas, discussion, questions? Please, Greg.
Even in a new program, one of the things that we developed simultaneously was something I hope to present here next year called the Master Teacher Mentorship Model. And we looked at a way to expand, not to perpetuate the culture that we worked so hard to establish, and looked at who might want to teach undergraduate students who are not the traditional folks, so that we need a tenure-track faculty who are already besieged. And so we're expanding this opportunity to alumni and to skilled community practitioners. But we're not just inviting them to the class to present content. What we're asking is, if you're really interested in dabbling in academia and you think that you might like to assume a role, you need to participate in this Master Teacher Mentorship Model. And it's a 2-year cycle that will be planned, where the mentee will
will assume increasing responsibility for a particular course if they succeed in the first go-round, if they're viable and they self-select to continue. What we're looking for is money, funding. As it is, we've built some of that into our budget to be able to pay stipends to these folks, but we need development money and so on. But I think it will be, what we're finding is that in today's economic environment, most institutions do not have systematic ways of acculturating people into the world of education. And so we can't assume that people who are content experts have a clue about how to teach, let alone teaching undergraduate students, which for public health is not historical. So we're excited to see what will happen.
I'm sorry, I missed your name and where you're from.
I'm sorry, I'm Sharon Opassis. I'm the program director for the undergraduate program at the University of Illinois. And we've been in development for 2 years, but have finally gotten final approval. But this is an integrated part of our curriculum.
I'm good. I'm starting this name and email around. You'd like to join the listserv together?
AACU's listserv is really an opportunity to do this kind of exchange. And if you get your name on the listserv, Susan Ellerkin tells me we'll get you on the listserv.
Karen?
Hi, I'm Karen Goldman, Kingsborough Community College in New York, where we've had a community health public health program for 25 years, and we're really proud of it. So please don't ignore the community colleges. So I wanted to mention the state of New York has, which I just found out about and could kill myself that I missed it, is a successful teaching conference, and it's fabulous, and it's run by community colleges, because if you can't teach there, you can't teach anywhere, and it's the most horrible, humbling, it was both, it was humiliating experience to go from teaching grad school to go to a community college, and to know that there are those networks around is really important. I was just curious, you said you mentioned that there were 49 accredited schools. Out of how many? How many others are out there? Does anybody know how many MPH programs there are that are not accredited?
Well, there are 49 accredited schools. I believe there are 84 accredited programs, and there are many programs out there. I don't know that anyone knows how many there are. In my state, for instance, I'm from Florida, there are 12 MPH granting institutions. Three of them are accredited schools, I think three or four accredited programs, and the rest are just out there.
Now, I'm just wondering how big a proportion of all the, MPH programs that is. And then how did you get public health to be a science gen ed course?
Yeah.
Dear God, I can't, where I am,
teach at me.
It's just amazing. In New York State, I have been told that if anything has the word health in the title, it cannot be a liberal art, it can't be a gen ed. Mm. Especially a liberal art. Mm. But it's like, how do you do, because that's, that's the exercise, that's the CPR, that's the condition. So we've been trying to figure out what else to call it. Maybe nobody else has that problem, but public makes it better.
Public wellness.
It's just interesting. Thanks, I just need to get that out of my system.
I think we have time for one more.
I think the naming of courses is sort of like dealt with apps. And so we spend a lot of time on the naming of courses to both use as a marketing tool for students,
yeah,
and to get through that kind of a process. And at the University of Illinois, I'm sorry, very, very traditional, very bureaucratic. We got our three prerequisites have been approved as gen eds. So, and they've all been oversubscribed. So we haven't had any difficulty with that, but we call them things like public health and the study of disease and epidemics. We call the introductory course Health in the Public, and it's part of the U.S. Society course. The third one is Public Health and Global Society, so that's part of the global health, whatever. And we were very careful about what we communicated to the Senate Committee on Education about these things, so, and they looked at it with a fine-tooth comb.
We need to respect to the time factor in here, but two last things. I apologize for not sending this list around early. If you put your card up here, I promise to get you on the list. And again, Dick, Christine, and Donna promise me next year there'll be another symposium the day before EPHA on undergrad.
Yep.
It was wonderful. I hope you come to it. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.